Good evening, and welcome to the third of our four live election forums this week on Raven Radio. I'm your host, reporter Emily Kwong. So, for the past 2 weeks, we've been bringing you profiles and statements from your candidates for local government. The mayoral forum that was planned for last night has been rescheduled to next Thursday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. So tune in then to hear from Mary Magnuson, Matthew Hunter, and Ben Maiasato. But tonight, we're steering the conversation away from candidates. We're not talking about election races at all and towards policy. But don't touch the dial. I promise this is going to be fascinating and really worth your while. Because when you go into that ballot booth, there will be a question there that is going to be begging for your answer. So the assembly has put the following question on the ballot. It asks if SICA should raise the cap, basically the limit on local property taxes, by 2 mils. That's $2 for every $1,000 your property is valued. Right now it's at 6 mils. But the increase that this ballot question is asking is, should we put it at 8 mils? So that would be $8 in total for every $1,000 your property is valued. A citizens task force has recommended raising property taxes as a ballot budget balancing component. That's a tongue twister, isn't it? And the assembly wants to use it to help balance the city budget as well. This question, if passed, will involve dedicating 1 mil worth of revenue to the electric fund to stabilize rates. So the question before you, me, and all of us is how to vote. And tonight I'm speaking with four wonderful folks who are deliberating that very same question and have all agreed to come on the program. So I'm going to go around the table and first introduce Marjorie Parmalee. She was born in Sitka and served in city government for 23 years working in the finance department. How are you doing, Marjorie Parmalee?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. And next to Marjorie is Gary Paxton. He was born and raised in Sitka as well and spent 30 years in the Army. You might know him as our former city administrator, where he served 9 years in Sitka's government. How are you doing today, Gary?
Terrifically.
Great. We also have Robin Sherman here. She moved to Sitka in 2015. Before coming to Alaska, she worked in local, state, and regional government in Massachusetts. Robin is currently doing research, writing, and editing on a consulting basis. Her husband is Rob Allen, CEO of Sitka Community Hospital. Robin, how are you doing this evening?
Glad to be here with all these longtime Sitkins.
Longtime Sitkins. It's okay. I'm a new-time Sitkin. I got here not so long ago. And we also have John Stein with us. He's lived in Sitka on and off since 1959, where he worked at the pulp mill. He was a tax assessor at one point, the mayor of Wasilla. Has worn a variety of different hats, really. Thank you so much for coming on the program. How are you doing today?
Happy to be here.
That's great news. So we're going to start out by giving everyone just a chance to talk about how they're voting. And you can say if you haven't totally made up your mind yet, but what you think you're going to do when you get into that ballot box. And whoever would like to go first can. Or I can pick someone. Gary Paxton, do you want to? How are you going to vote on this ballot question?
First of all, the city has had two or three really difficult years. Rob Allen, by the way, is doing a terrific job at the hospital. And my view is, my judgment is that the city does need additional revenue. But I disagree with the property tax for three reasons. First of all, and you didn't mention this in the ballot question, but to do that, you have to amend the charter. This charter, which was done by some wonderful people, has created Sitka as a unified city and borough in a permanent fund. Ketchikan has neither a certified city and borough, and they certainly don't have a permanent fund. So the point is that charter is a really fundamentally important and valued document that I think you need to be highly judicious about when and if you change it. Second of all, property tax, in my view, hurts those people who can least afford a tax raise. And third, it's bad for business. And if we're ever going to get ourselves in better shape than we are, we need an improving economy.
That's Gary Paxton talking about why he's voting no on Proposition 1. Robin Sherman, how will you be voting on this question?
Looking at our municipal budget, I think that we need a mix of spending cuts and revenue increases to balance it. next year. And when it comes to the options for increasing revenue, I ask who's being asked to pay more, how much more are they being asked to pay? And when somebody's suggesting raising a tax or a fee, it's important to ask, if it goes up, is it really going to raise the revenue we need? And how long is it going to do that for? I'm going to vote yes in favor of the property tax because I think it's the most likely of all the options to raise the money that we need. And I think it's actually going to cost us a lot less than some of the other options.
Robin Sherman, she'll be voting yes on Proposition 1. And Marjorie Parmalee, how will you be voting?
Well, I've already voted because I'm leaving town on Sunday and wanted to get my bases covered.
Very good citizen. Thank you.
Yes. And I voted no. I understand where our revenue is and that we do need to increase our revenue. I also understand that 33% is a huge hike at one time, especially when we're already doing reassessing our property. So a lot of new revenue has come from that already.
Just to back up, 33%, what's that figure in reference to?
That's the raise. Two mills is 33% of what we're currently paying. So
gotcha.
When you put it at 33% versus two mills, it sounds more realistic as to what it really is. So we do need more revenue, but I've worked in finance long enough to know there are other things that need to be done first.
Thank you, Marjorie Parmalee. She already has voted no as an absentee voter on this election. And John Stein, how will you be voting on Proposition 1?
Well, I favor Proposition 1. I believe that the low tax rates from multiple sources best serve the community. It more widely distributes the cost of local government services not only to homeowners, but the landowners, industry, and commerce. Multiple sources, in other words, both the sales tax and a property tax, help flatten out the fluctuations as economies change, so that you may have a slow tax year for retail, but a big tax year for housing, which having a reasonable rate for both of those makes sense. Compared to other Alaska cities, 6 mills, 8 mills is very modest. Most other communities have experienced higher values for those. The trade-off to limit the electric rate rise is a good bargain. Sales tax here is high relative to other cities, and I think affects the those least able to pay for it. So having a 6% sales tax is a burden, more of a burden to families than I think increasing the property tax.
Emily, may I just, and this is not a debate, I'm not being argumentative. If I say there's another way to do it, then I should tell you how to do that. If you extend the 6% sales tax to 4 years, that's about almost $1 million. Each meal state's $850. If indeed our property values are really understated, if they're understated by 10%, that's $600,000. In my view is, and there are other options available too, but the other third thing that would come to my mind is, if you take the sales tax exemption off of senior citizens who can easily afford to pay it,
mm-hmm.
have a limit so people who need that get it, you're going to get equal to or more than what we're doing, than I think that is. So, and I guess I am being argumentative, I apologize, but businesses can get hurt by property tax. And if you don't think a 30% increase in property tax is not going to have impact on low-income people, I think that it will.
Thank you, Gary Paxton. In the interest of fairness, would you like a chance to respond to that, Robin Sherman? And then I will, just so you know, leave some time at the end for us to talk about possible alternatives. If this fails or what you'd like to see the city or assembly do differently, we'll definitely get to that. Robin Sherman, what do you have to say to that?
I think I want to observe real quickly that I think we're all trying to get to the same goal, in that we're all agreeing that more revenue is needed, and I think everybody wants to make sure that we're raising that revenue fairly and not having too heavy a burden on the people who can least afford it or on our businesses which provide jobs. So we're trying to get to the same thing. I guess my concern about the sales tax is, and this is what I was referring to when I said, are we really going to raise the money we need? When the sales tax goes up or when taxes or fees go up, people look for alternatives. And you only have to go out to the recycling center and look in that big cardboard recycling box to see how many boxes are coming in from Amazon Prime. So people are trying to avoid the sales tax by buying things from out of town. That hurts our local businesses. It would be great if we could charge sales tax for out-of-town purchases, but we can't under state law. So that's one concern. I'm concerned the more the sales tax goes up, the more people are going to look for alternatives. I'm also concerned about how the sales tax affects low-income folks. And with respect to the senior sales tax exemption, I completely agree with Gary that it should only be available to the senior households that really need it. My concern is what it's going to take to police that. And do we want the city to be in the business of having to look at people's income to qualify people based on income? And I've been in jobs where I've had to do that. And once you qualify people based on income, there's always somebody who says, my neighbor has a senior citizen's card and she's cheating. She doesn't really deserve it. And then we have to become the income police. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. The last point I want to make about the affordability of the property tax is that unlike a sales tax and unlike an increase in electric rates, homeowners have the ability to write their property taxes off of their income. It is not a one-to-one thing, but you can deduct any property taxes you pay from your federal income tax. So you do get some of that money back, unlike with a sales tax.
These are all really good points. And I want to talk to one other aspect. So we're talking about property taxes and values, right? And to start out, there's this argument that Sitka's property taxes are pretty low, and not by a little, but by a lot. If you look around the state, there are 15 boroughs that currently levy a property tax and 12 have tax caps. In Valdez, it's 20 mils. In Kodiak, it's 10.75 mils. In Haines, it's 7. In Petersburg, it's 10, but they have some bonded debt, so it's actually over 11 mils there. Kenai, it's 8. Ketchikan, it's 8. And Sitka, it's 6. So a lot of people also, when they're considering this question, they're wondering, well, if we don't raise property taxes now, then when? Is Sitka having a difficulty keeping up with how it has evolved? Taxes haven't raised since 1990. They have been tried to raise in 2011 and 2013. So my question for you is it time for Sitka to raise the mill rate? Do you foresee it being raised anytime in the future, or is 6 mills the appropriate amount for where we are right now? And anyone can jump in to talk about that.
On that one, this is Marjorie Parmley, and I don't think it should matter time or not time. It needs to matter on need, whether you need it or not, and whether you have all your ducks in a row. And some of these towns that you mentioned who have higher taxes may not have a sales tax. So they're not getting hit at both ends. And we've already got a sales tax. There are a lot of holes there that need to be fixed. And maybe we can speak to those too, but that's a lot of revenue that we are missing. It is time at some point to do it, but it has to be based on need, not, oh, well, we're lower now, we got to catch up. If we got all our ducks in a row in finance, then I think probably only one mill is going to be what's needed.
This is John Stein, and I think that's a good point Marjorie makes. But I think the point is that the levy of property tax is set on an annual basis, and we're talking about the cap here. And of course, the people we elect to the assembly and the folks we hire to run the business should adjust downward the years that the revenues from sales tax rates are higher. So that's something you make, a decision you make based on your assessed value every year and the needed tax for the city budget. And I asked years ago for the mill levy history of Sitka. And
John?
Yes.
I'm going to intervene for 1 second. I think we're having a little difficulty hearing you. We're having a little difficulty hearing you on air. It's not your fault. It's a technical issue. So what I'm going to do in the interest of fairness again is we're going to go to some music to resolve some of the microphones issues in the room, and we'll come right back. I'd like to, because I think this is an important,
I know.
Hold on to your thought, and we'll be right back here, Raven Radio. We're talking about Proposition 1 and have some great sickens in here to talk about it. Stay tuned.
So the point I was, hold on, just to orient us
once again, you're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, and we're talking about Proposition 1. That's the question that's going before voters about raising the cap on our mill rate. John Stein was just about to talk about mill levies, some analysis you've done. Go ahead.
That the levy is the cap on the levy, but judicious management, I think, you know, on years you needed less revenue, you wouldn't have to go to that cap. So then I had looked back over Sitka's mill levies over the years, and 1974 was a key year because that's when a lot of the highway paving and stuff was done in Sitka, and it was done with state money largely, or state money subsidizing local improvement districts for neighborhoods to pave. And back in 1974, the mill levy was 4 mills. It went to 6 in 95, and then for the next 10 years, it was below 5 mills. And it was a history of chronic underfunding of you know, future expenses. So there was no plan put in place, as we have now, to refund and repave and rebuild our utilities and our roads and our sidewalks and those kinds of things. Right now, I think harbors and all the city buildings have reserve funds or sinking funds to replace roofs and windows and those kinds of things when they go out. But this is a good argument, in my view, of why the senior exemption doesn't really make sense, because you know, back in 83 and 89, I was active in the economy and enjoyed all of those, all that construction, all the paving of Lake Street and Lincoln, all that kind of stuff that the state brought. I was saved the expense of putting anything aside. And now that it's needed, I'm a senior citizen and I should be excused from paying part of that cost. And I think that's philosophically wrong. A lot of people that I talk to who are seniors have a sense of entitlement to that senior exemption. Like, I've been here, I've paid my taxes all those years, and it's time for me to, you know, be able to back off. Well, a lot of folks, including myself, can pay the rate. And we enjoyed those years of low mill levies, it's time to pay the piper.
Do you think property taxes of all the kind of in the basket of taxes we're looking at are the right one to go for?
I think that makes sense. I think property taxes are low, as you mentioned, respect to other communities in Alaska, and sales tax is high relative to other communities in Alaska. Not too many other jurisdictions have a 6% sales tax, and I think that's pushing the upper limit.
Robin Sherman, go ahead. What do you have to say to add on to that?
It's true that our property tax rate is low compared to other communities in Alaska and to other communities in the United States, but it's also important to realize that we have a real affordability problem in this town. There are a lot of people, some of them are seniors, some of them are families, some of them are single, some people are disabled, that are just barely getting by. And any increase in their living expenses is going to be a burden. And I think our challenge is to say, what's the current burden of taxes and fees on our community as a whole? Who's paying that? What's a fair way to raise the additional revenue that we need? And who's going to pay for that?
And would you say that property taxes are the most fair way to raise revenue? And if so, why?
I think it's important to look at what people are currently paying for all of the city services. And we have to look at the property tax, plus the sales tax, plus the fees for our utilities. And then we have to weigh them against each other. And I guess my concern is that if we can't raise the property tax because folks just don't want to do that right now, then what's going to happen? Well, we could go to the sales tax, and I shared my concerns about the sales tax a little bit before. I'm actually more concerned about our electric rates. And, you know, my understanding from looking at the city budget is it's really our debt for the Blue Lake Dam project that's creating a lot of burden. I know we're going to talk about it. That, mm-hmm. But I'm very concerned that if we don't have the ability to subsidize electric rates from the property tax, those rates are going to continue to go up. We may not be able to raise as much money as we want to because people are going to conserve energy, some people are going to switch fuels, and also our lowest income households just aren't going to be able to pay, and we know we have a real delinquency problem. And once we have that delinquency problem, we can try to collect it, but if we don't collect it, we still need to raise the money, and that just means that the rates are going to continue to go up for the people who can afford to pay. And I think that that's going to be more expensive than the property tax in the long run.
Okay, Robin Sherman. Gary Paxton.
I think low property taxes and low electrical rates are good for everybody. And my personal bias is that if you increase property tax by one-third, first of all, I think you're looking back at the days of Rocky Gutierrez and the boys when this city was streamlined, efficient, and it's still a well-organized machine, but they are used to spending a lot more money than they were in those days. So I'm just not convinced if you give extra money to the city that they're not going to just use the whole one. Whatever we choose, my recommendation to the administration would be they should take at least 25% of whatever they get in increased taxation, whichever means, and put that in a sinking fund for the general fund, and get there by cutting the rest of government. So these are no easy answers.
No, they're not. Can I throw something else into the mix too? Go ahead.
One thought.
Sure.
And listen, Mark Gorman and I get along well. He's a good guy. He gets up every day, trying to do the best he can for our city, making the right kind of judgments, and. We've talked about the senior's exemption on taxes, and he's got, I think, a very simple way of making it easy for people who should qualify for that to come in and do it. Because I think if you're going to do that, you do need to make it very easy for people who need the exemption for senior sales to come in and get that exemption. Pax out.
Okay. That's Gary Paxton, former city administrator. I want to bring up another issue around this kind of, and I know it's difficult to tease out all these things. They're all interrelated. But to return to this idea of just property itself in Sitka, another argument I've been hearing in the community, an argument on the other side is, our mill rate is at 6 mills, but our property values are so high. And I want to air that point a little bit. I've read this a lot in letters to the editor, to the Sentinel, certainly in my conversations with the community. And so I wrote to Wendy Lawrence, who's the assessor, asking her basically where we stand compared to other communities. And she said Sitka's property values are the third highest in the state, following Juneau and Anchorage. Last year's median sales price for a single-family starter home is $375,000. She wrote, Sitka is a destination economy with regional and even national economics at play, and as such has seen steady market values even through the late 2000s recession. So people are arguing, well, you raise property taxes because all our properties are going to be reappraised within the next few years. Is not more revenue going to come into the city eventually? And to that point, I asked her about this as well. So the assessor's office is currently doing a reappraisal of everybody. 60% of properties in Sitka haven't been appraised since 2003. They're not up to market value yet. And their plan is to get them to market value, get that dollar figure up to date within the next 3 years. It's going to take a lot of work. They need a computerized system to do mass appraisal, because otherwise you have people going door to door to door to door to door, and that takes, there's only 365 days in a year. But her hope is that the city could see $1 million worth of revenue coming in from per year on personal property. Right now, they're collecting about half that at the current property tax evaluation level. However, we aren't going to see this money for four, maybe 5 years, because of the time it will take to catch everybody up to speed, and also how property taxes work, right? It takes a year for the money to come in. Sitka's on a four-year cycle. So should we raise the mill rate to just get us over this hump, or should we wait for what will become a greater kind of bubble of property tax revenue to come in? Robin Sherman, it's yours.
I want to point out that on the ballot, we are not proposing to raise the mill rate. The proposal is to raise the cap.
That's an important point. It's not to raise the mill rate, it's to raise the cap.
Right now, property taxes are capped at 6 mills. If the ballot initiative were to pass, the property taxes would be capped at 8 mills, which gives the city government the flexibility to set the tax rate at up to 8 mills to raise the revenue needed. I know there are folks out there who say that you give city government the ability to raise taxes and they'll take every penny that they possibly can. That has not been my experience with local government. And I think it's important to remember that our assembly all live in this town. For some reason, they want a job that involves long hours and no pay and lots of public criticism. But I do believe that our elected officials are sensitive to what folks in the community want. And I'm not necessarily assuming that if the assembly has the ability to set the mill rate at up to 8 mills, it would necessarily stay at 8 mills for a long time if the property values went up. It would allow the mill rate to go back down. And the last point I'd like to make about property values is that I'm actually concerned about our property values. You know, your home is, for most people, your biggest investment. And a big part of the value of your home is the attractiveness of your community. And I think part of the reason why property values are so high in Sitka is that this is a really fabulous place to live. And part of that is our harbors, our trails, our good schools, our libraries, and our parks. And we may not be able to afford everything that we've historically been able to spend money on, but being able to continue to fund that quality of life is important to maintaining our property values.
Marjorie Parmalee, that's Robin Sherman. Thank you, talking about how to look at property value in Sitka. What is your response to that?
Well, I've worked both in the property tax department and in the sales tax department. I've been with the city for over 20 years in the finance department, and I really would like to believe that if we vote for this and just changing the cap, they won't go up to 8%. But I can tell you chances are about 98-1 that they will. And right now we have two other huge things to clean up before we go there. Number one, we need to get our financial statements and everything in order, get a clean audit, and so that we're well supported, know what we have and where we have it. And number two, I'm not quite sure about this. We can't do a mass assessment change without a new computer program, because when I worked in property tax and assessing in the early 90s, we did it, and we didn't have these programs, and we did across the board increases. So it's, yeah,
I think that's a question for the city to answer.
The city can answer that, but it's one we need to raise, because
definitely
it's something that needs to be dealt with. We do need to be doing those. They should be done, you know, every 3 years at least.
And we did, I should just say this, we did invite the city to participate in this forum, and they declined, though they did provide us a lot of information to various questions that I asked in advance. I want to talk about another aspect of this kind of Gordian knot, which is the electric fund. So in the past, mill rate attempts to increase the mill rate have gone towards the road maintenance in Sitka. But now what we see is folded into this ordinance the promise to dedicate 1 mil worth of electric rates to the mill rate revenue to the electric fund. And the goal is to keep rates from skyrocketing. So I see kind of two alternatives. If this doesn't pass, the electric department has said that rates could go up between 11 and 20% next year, depending on what happens with the winter. If the winter is very, very warm, this was the warmest year on record, and our consumption as a city has just continued to go down and down, that's the number they're talking about. If this does pass, rates would increase by 5% for next year. But I asked Brian Bertacci, well, would it stay there? Would it stay at 5%? What would happen after that? And this is what he wrote to me, Brian Bertacci being the utility director for the city. If we assume a 5% rate increase for part of FY17 and a 1% increase in load for next year and the following year, and that mill rate change giving us $1 million extra, and he also talked about more money coming in from the rate stabilization fund, but here's the interesting thing. The increase for FY18 could still be on the order of 15% to meet the bond covenants. So we could still see a rate increase, not for next year, but for the following year, of a magnitude of 15%. And I found that interesting. They're already looking far ahead at what rate increases could be in the year to follow. But there is something else to consider. And I know I'm throwing a lot of information out to you, but this is a complex issue. The electric department is working to bring more customers online, and they're working really, really hard to do that. They want to upgrade equipment for the fish processors. They want to introduce an interruptible boiler program for places like Search and the Coast Guard and Mount Edgecombe and the school district. What this would basically do is increase our load. If we could increase our load as a city and have more people using energy, our rates wouldn't have to go up that much. This is just projections for if our rates flatline. And if this all pans out, Brian Bertacci, utility director, wrote to me that the city's estimate is it can bring in $1.6 million in revenue for FY18. So he wrote, these opportunities, if realized, could significantly reduce the level of the rate increase in 2018. So given this, if we don't know what the rate increase should be, how should we proceed as a city? And I bring all this up because this is part of what the assembly has really been talking about, the electric rates and how to keep them from going up. Gary Paxton.
Deep breath, Pax. The sky is not falling. These continuous doom scenarios from the finance department, I love Jay Sweeney and the electric department, I think are troublesome for our community. First of all, the electric department should stand on its own. The principle of city government is the general fund funds the general fund, every enterprise fund funds itself. That's the principle. That's how it's supposed to be run. I looked at the electrical fund the other day and talked to Jay and Mark about it. And I'm misquoting this. If I am misquoting, then I stand corrected. But they have $2.5 million programmed a year for doing, I'm sure, important work in the distribution and the substation system. I'm sure they need some of that. But if I was there, I think I'd say, okay, give me what you would do if you had $1.5 million, $2 million a year versus $2.5 million, and what's the downside? What is it with $2 million? You know, somehow they've got to be able to manage through some really complex and difficult times. So
certainly.
And the last point I would make is they need to focus like a laser on going to our federal government, Murkowski and the other senator and congressman, and see why we cannot get some relief from the federal government for the Blue Lake Dam. There is no habitat impairment in that stream. Department of Energy has money available for those kind of things. And listen, I think our city government is well run and they're serious. But I would say they got about 18 things they lobby for. I would lobby for one thing next year.
Interesting.
And that's the electoral.
Gary Paxton and Robin Sherman, go ahead.
Well, I'm all for shaking down Uncle Sam, and I hope that works. But we don't have any guarantees that we are going to be able to get that money, and we have to have a plan to be able to cover those bonds on our own. And I guess I'm a little bit more concerned about it than Gary, because right now we're paying interest only on the greater portion of that debt. So over time, it's actually going to get more expensive, not less expensive. And I'd be very concerned about not investing in our electric infrastructure. Remember, you know, the dam is the big expensive item, but generation is useless if your distribution system is falling apart. So I don't want to skimp on the maintenance that we need, because I want to know that my lights and my refrigerator and my heating system are going to work when we turn them on. And I don't think that this is going to get better. If we can get some federal relief, that would be great. But we have to have a plan to pay for it on our own. And I don't want that to be taking money out of maintaining the system just to pay the debt.
That's Robin Sherman. We're talking about how to best to support the electric fund in Sitka. And actually, our phone lines are open, 747-5877. If you'd like to call in and be a part of this conversation, we really welcome your voice with it. John Stein.
So I guess I have a challenge on the capital work that Gary mentioned. As it was explained to me, there are electrical bond proceeds that remain that are being allocated for that work. So it's different than rate revenue and adjusting expenses that are charged against rate revenue. In other words, trucks, time, men, union, the whole thing. That comes out of the rates, but the bond proceeds are what's intended to build the new transformer at Marine Street and that sort of thing. So that's what I was led to understand.
Yeah, I don't know that. Just to comment on that, I don't know the details. Again, this is, I think, a question for the city. But I do know that next year they need $10 million to meet the bond covenants and $8 million to pay for that electrical infrastructure, which, as Robin Sherman was saying, is what allows us to keep the lights on. So a lot of it is going to just maintaining the transformers and the substations and the electric lines that run around town. But Marjorie Parmley, do you want to weigh in on this?
One comment in that if enterprise funds, as Paxton says, need to support themselves, that's the whole goal, that's the whole way government is set up. And are we setting a precedent? I mean, we could be sitting here next year because one of the harbors had their float sink, and then we got to raise it again because now we got to support the harbor fund. That is a concern, whether we're setting a precedent that just might boil over into another fund that needs support. And I don't use the harbor, so I don't really want to have to pay more taxes to support a harbor I don't use. And they'll just have to raise harbor rates to support that. We may have to raise electrical rates. No matter what we raise, there will be families in this town that can't pay it. You know, it doesn't take working at the city very long to know and to see there are families that can't. And how that's going to be resolved and worked out, I don't know.
Thank you so much, Marjorie Parmley. We have a caller on line one who is joining us right now. Hi, what's your name? And welcome to Raven Radio's call-in show about Proposition 1.
Oh, Okay, yeah, I would like to. Okay, we turn this down.
No problem. This is James, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, James, go ahead.
Yeah, rating the millage rate is a bad idea. You know, to try to create revenue for the electric and stuff. I mean, heaven to bitsies, you know, we got that fancy electric mill out the road there. You know, I know it's going to, you know, it's already got defaults. It's not a fault of ours.
Are you talking about the Blue Lake Dam?
Yeah, the turbines, you know, they're going money sack on us already. It's brand new.
Well, we should talk about the Blue Lake Dam, but is there any question you want us to raise?
No, I just want to make comments, I walk around town a lot and I see 10 million city trucks. Every person's driving a different truck. Now we got to cut down, you know, how many vehicles are out there. The city ought to take a...
Thank you. Yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, James, thanks so much for calling in.
The city ought to take a tally on how many vehicles the city has.
Thank you so much for calling in, James. To talk a little bit about actually what he said, which is there's another dimension to this, which is, of course, the size of city government and what is the right size for Sitka. And I want to ask you guys that question and maybe take a Goldilocks approach. You know, is it too big, too small, or just right? But I think that the thing that's really important to remember, and I know people say this often, is the fact that we do live on an island. So there are no redundant systems. There's no one we can go to finance our operation. And the majority of the city's budget is in personnel. It's these 161 people who keep the libraries and the parks and the hospital running and the roads. And speaking of the roads, Sitka, though, yes, we have brand new trucks, our roads aren't doing all that great. We have a deferred maintenance issue on these roads. They were paved over 20 years ago. The Public Works Department has said, and they said this during a Citizens Task Force discussion, that 70% of paved roads will reach a gravel condition in 10 years or less if they are not repaved. So it's something to consider, that just the state our roads are in. And the problem is there's no dedicated fund for road maintenance. And every time a ballot question about property taxes come before the public, it's been about roads. Now it's about the electric fund. But I want to raise the question of, what are your expectations for what city government should be in Sitka, given the situation that we're in and the importance of maintaining what we have or looking at reductions? I know that's a big question, but whoever would like to talk about it. Yeah, go ahead.
John Stein here. I worked at the city for a while, and what's sort of astounding by our isolation is how many functions the city has under their belt. And I made a list here, which includes the enterprise funds and such. So we have electric, we have water, we have sewer, we have roads, we have stormwater, we have refuse collection, we have landfill that we ship out. The Harbors Department, Public Works and Construction Management, assessing, planning. We have a heavy duty shop that maintains the fire engines and the heavy equipment. Fire Department, Police Department, Jail. We have a contract to house prisoners for the state. Library, Harrigan Centennial Hall. It's a hugely complex organization, and I think that boils down to like 15 departments totally. But there's to balance all that and keep it going is really important. And then those functions have evolved over the years as things we value. Parks and Rec, I didn't even list that. But the notion that we would let roads go to gravel just is appalling to me, because up in the Northland, we couldn't maintain roads that had more than 300 vehicles a day on them gravel. We had operators running graders, 8 hours a day, and they're just not maintainable. And in a climate where it's wet like we have, it's going to be even even more difficult. So I, and there's issues like dust and grit and dirt and all that kind of thing when roads deteriorate. And I think that's a huge quality of life issue that a few of us who've lived here for a long time really appreciate the value of paving and weatherproofing our roads.
Emily?
John Stein. Yes, Gary Paxton.
Government has an insatiable desire to do good with other people's money. John is right about that. I don't want the road system to go down to gravel. But right now, the electrical department is a challenge, and they should stand on their own. I mean, we may not like it, but they should. That's the principle. They should stand on their own.
But what if they can't stand on their own? What if we're in a situation where just how it shook out?
Then they would raise rates. But listen.
But how far can we raise rates until people can't afford it?
Go ahead.
But we do have a call. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
I lost my train of thought. I lost it.
You were talking about how we shouldn't go to gravel roads, or every fund should pay for itself, basically.
When you look at the capital maintenance numbers, they will just bring you to your knees. That was my thought. We need right now.
Yeah.
We got a state in trouble with this budget. We've got the phenomenon of our electrical dam upgrade and the cost of that. So this is a time in the next 5 years, in my view, maybe you're postponing disaster, but that you need to be really prudent about what you do and how you spend your money. And so I just think that's sort of where we are. And I don't know how much the electric department can cut their budget. I don't know how much. But
yeah.
Hey, listen, if it's got to go to 20%, then I'd say they need to take some of that 20% and cut their budget. I mean, these are serious times now.
Okay.
Gary
Paxton, Robin Sherman, would you like to jump in on this? That's okay if not, because we actually do have a call.
Why don't you go to the call, and I'll jump in a little bit later.
Sounds great. Okay. Caller, you are on Raven Radio. Oh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Who is this?
This is Dan.
Dan, welcome to Raven Radio's Proposition 1 forum. And thanks for calling in. What do you got to say?
Well, I have a suggestion. Everybody's talking about taxes and all that. I don't think taxes where it is. What we have and what we should think about is that our city government per capita might be a little bit high. If we have one city person for 100 city residents, that's about 25 people paying that city person's wages and something for him to do. And if we have two per 100, then we really can't afford it because there's just not enough to go around. When you have 100 residents, two of them are children and one's a wife. You only have 25 people out of 100 that are paying the taxes to pay for the city government. And so I think the city government needs to be run on a per capita basis. And we really shouldn't have more than one city government for more than 100 people in the government.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan, for calling in. And it's interesting, we're talking about government services in terms of roads, but you're talking about actual personnel. Robin Sherman, what is your comment?
And if you look at the city budget and the budgets of all of the public entities, including the school district and the hospital and all the enterprise funds, personnel are the biggest portion of those budgets, and people are expensive. And I hear a lot of folks saying we need to cut the size of city government, and there are too many people working for city government. And there are a lot of people who have been here longer than I am who are more familiar with it. But I guess my question to the folks who want to cut city government is, first, exactly what services and positions do you want to cut, and what are we going to lose? So that's my first question. And then I have a concern in that my understanding of how it works in Alaska is when you cut positions, whether it is in the city, or in the school district, these public positions that are part of the Alaska pension system, you still have obligations to pay the pension benefits that those employees have incurred during their service. So if you are eliminating a position, the state pension system will require you to hire an expert called an actuary to say, how much money does the city and borough of Sitka owe this person that they have already earned in their retirement benefits? So first we have to pay for the study, and then we will have to pay for the benefits that they've already incurred. And there is also a minimum number that we can't go below in terms of paying into the pension system. The final thing is that when we lay people off, it has an impact on our unemployment rate that we pay. So there are costs associated with laying off city employees in addition to the services that we will lose when those people aren't working here anymore. And you can't just make that up by contracting those services out. So when people say cut the city budget, cut positions, it's important to understand, one, what positions do you want to cut? What services won't we be providing anymore? And how much is it actually going to cost us to cut those positions?
Robin Sherman talking about that there's a cost to losing city staff in the form of paying pensions and benefits. And we have a caller on line one, I believe. Tom, you're on the program.
This is Tom Conley.
Thanks for calling.
Hello, this is Tom Conley. I'm with the school district. And I have a question about the outcome of the election in the sense of the cost of doing business in the school district.
The cost of doing business in the school district.
27.9% of the school budget is given by the city. It's last year it was $5.6 million. And there's a great deal of talk in Juneau that the teacher retirement system and the personnel retirement system are going to be whittled down and transferred a great deal of it to the municipality. So the cost of running the schools is going to go up, and I wonder what effect it's going to have on the mill levy that is being adjusted at this time. Thanks.
Thank you so much for calling, Tom. Tom's question is, how would this affect the Sitka School District if we had to reduce the size of government? It should be pointed out that the city did reduce their operating budget by their general fund budget by $1 million last year, and further reductions are likely. Yes. Marjorie Parmalee, would you like to
answer? Well, I really couldn't say exactly. And this city, the way it's operating right now, has a habit of doing a panic mode and getting all excited over sometimes nothing. So I guess I would have concern about jumping in with what could happen, what will happen, what might happen. Right now, we know where we are with the electric fund. We know that has to be changed. And I can tell you from working in finance, there are a lot other places to get money for this city that have nothing to do with cutting a position.
So what are those? I'm curious. Where should we be looking for more money? This is Robin.
Number one, we need to get good audits. Having bad audits affects the city government by our bond rating, our credit rating, all kinds of things. And for the last 3 years, we haven't had good audits. We've had, qualified witness? No, can't remember. There's a technical name for it. And it means that we haven't kept our accounts balanced. So given any moment, normally you would balance all accounts at least by the quarter. Those aren't happening. And we have money that isn't getting collected.
It should be pointed out that the city is currently undergoing an audit.
They do every year.
And they do every year.
That's standard procedure. It's done every year. And it's right. That's how it's always been. But it just hasn't been quite up to snuff. And that is important, and we need to do that. We also have other things that aren't being collected. And I don't really want to speak to those because it's more pointedly.
I think, too, without the city here to really,
I really
answer these concerns,
but I can just tell you there is
we'd have to. But John Stein, did you want to jump in on this at all? Or?
No, thank you.
I really appreciate you guys being willing to talk about this. Go ahead. Yeah.
This is Gary again. I'm not an advocate of firing a bunch of city employees, whether they're four or five that can be eliminated over time, preferably when they retire, they leave, that would be okay. But and you hate people who say, when I was there, how we did it. But when we used to sit down in our budget, to balance a budget, we'd always be somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million over, but this is just a general fund now, right? And I say, okay, troops, everybody go back and cut what the heck you can. And again, this is a smaller number than we're dealing with now. But we're always able to do that and end up with a few $100,000 to the good. Now listen, the problem now is more complex than that. So I don't know exactly, Robin, to say how you could eliminate money in city government, but I think there could be further belt tightening. Having said that, I think additional revenue is necessary and we encourage. And the thing I laid out gets you over $2 million, probably $2.5 million.
Right.
And again,
no, you explained.
You know, that may not be the right way to go. But
what do you think of all this, Robin Sherman?
Well, I really appreciate the experience that both Gary and Marjorie bring, having worked for the city for a long time. But I think that Gary just acknowledged it's a little bit difficult to apply past experience to our current situation because it's a little bit different. And I think the big things that are different is right now the loss of federal and state support. And the Blue Lake Dam project, we have to understand that was $140 million. I don't have my calculator right here, but when you divide that by the number of residents of Sitka, you come up with a really big number. And, you know, a huge portion of that, I want to say 85 million of that, is bonds that'll need to be paid back. And that is really different. And I am willing to believe that we can tinker with the budget and find a little bit of savings here, a little bit of savings there. And knowing Mark and Jay and Wendy and Brian and all the other folks who are working really hard in city government, I believe that they're doing that. I think that they are looking for savings. They found some this year. They'll probably find some next year. But we are not going to be able to fill this budget gap by doing small things. We do need to find that revenue, and I think we're all back to where we started and that we all agree that more revenue is needed. And the question is, what is the best and fairest way to do that? I actually agree when you talk about enterprise funds that enterprise funds should be able to pay for themselves. Yeah, they are supposed to, but I think a decision was made that, you know, I wasn't the one who made it. $140 million project is really, really big for a city the size of Sitka. And we are now stuck with that decision, and it has fundamentally changed the nature of our electric enterprise fund. And we don't have a choice about paying it. We have to figure out how to come up with that money.
That's Robin Sherman. And the next thing I'd like to talk about is the Blue Lake Dam, just because it is a factor that has, as you're saying, fundamentally changed our economy. But John Stein, what are you going to say?
So Blue Lake Dam, yes. So
yes.
At the time, I was in on the early planning for Blue Lake. And at the time, we were at $100 or $140 oil. And the community was bleeding money into the oil companies by importing all the energy. And we were at a capacity with the existing facilities at Blue Lake. And so the increasing the efficiency by raising the dam made sense, and adding more efficient turbines and higher capacity to increase the capacity by 30%, I believe, just made a lot of sense in, 2007 and 8 and that kind of thing. And that's when the planning for this started. So by the time we got to the point of borrowing the money, hiring the contractors, and getting the project going, oil had dropped precipitously. And hence, competition for energy has now reversed and gone back to the oil companies. So I think when people look at the Blue Lake Dam and question the wisdom of it going in, you've got to look at the long term. I mean, this is a 50 or 100-year facility that's going to serve the community for a long time. It's going to provide energy to the fish processors and all of the, energy consumers in town. And I would think that there should be a move to encourage electric energy consumption, even though it might be incrementally a little more expensive. And I was running some numbers the other day. I had a standard, 75-80% oil burner efficiency plant in my house, and which has since been replaced. But I had the service cost, and it was $750 to service this boiler. And even if you pay more for electricity, you don't have the kind of maintenance costs that you do with oil. You don't create the smoke, the soot, the thing in the garage that makes weird noises and that kind of thing. My solution is to give everybody in town one of those little plug-in electric heaters. Plug that puppy in, no extra circuits, turn it on, and you don't have to look at oil
the line. Well, the city is going on this kind of campaign with super users, as we were talking about earlier. But it's I asked Utility Director Brian Bertacci, what has our usage done over the past 5 years? And the year they approved the dam, it was at 114 kilowatt hours. 114 million kilowatt hours for the whole community. And then the year after they approved that dam project, it just started to go down. And now it's at 104 million kilowatt hours. And that's just the reality of the situation. We have a call on line one. This is Scotty. Scotty, you're on Raven Radio talking to some folks who were deliberating Proposition 1. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good.
So go ahead with your comment or question.
First, I want to thank everybody for being there, and I've lived in town since we had one harbor master, and city staff and their effort to pay for a new dam by giving away air-to-air heat pumps was flawed and proved no vote was a mistake. And hearing about the new turbine corrosion on the dam reminds me of the city's incinerator. And learning about the incinerator was the last one that company made, and we had no warranties. I hear Doc Connolly, but Mrs. Parmalee has my focus, and I just thank you guys for being there. Hope you can hear me.
Thank you, Scotty. I think, were you able to hear Scotty a little bit? Okay, yeah, Gary Paxton, did you want to comment?
No, but I think the Blue Lake Dam was the right thing to do. I don't think they had an option other than to pursue it. Listen, I don't know how we get from here through the next 5 and 10 years, but I just don't know how we do that. But I think the next 5 to 10 years are the critical years to do that. And but I think it was a wise investment, and I'm praying for a cold winter.
I think a lot of people around the planet are.
Don't burn oil.
So the fact does remain, we did build the dam, and we're going to have to pay for it some way. And I want to play a bit of tape from Senator Stedman. So way back in 2012, Ed Ronco interviewed Senator Stedman, and he was tracking on the Blue Lake Dam project too. And everyone was saying, this is going to be great for Sitka. And in the long term, it very likely will. Back then, this was in 2012. People were getting charged 9 or 10 cents a kilowatt hour per month. Now it's more like 13 cents if you use 1,000 kilo. Anyway, so Ed asked the senator what he thought about all this, and Oh, wait, I don't think I have the full audio. Wait, no. I don't have the full audio. But what the audio said, Senator Steadman said, was basically if we go up to 17 cents a kilowatt hour, if we look at numbers at that level, it's lights out on Sitka's economy. That's what he said. And it gave me kind of chills when I heard it, because not that we're there right now. We're at, as I said, 13 kilowatt cents per kilowatt hour a month. But we're kind of living out the reality of paying for the dam. We decided to build it and now are dealing with the numbers to pay for us. And the backdrop of all of this, of course, is that there's just not enough revenue coming in to the electric department. And our electric rates, as far as other communities go, they're higher than Ketchikan's, which is pretty much run on a hydroelectric power like we are. But it's lower than Juneau's. You know, it's if you look at the rest of the state, it's actually not enormous. And so this is a hard question to ask, but is there an acceptable electric rate for Sitka? Is there a threshold at which you said, you know, raise it by 20% even, but or really the bigger question is, how should we pay off this dam if not raising rates? Yeah, go ahead, Robin Sherman.
Well, I guess my question, and this is information that should be available from the city, is what's our current delinquency rate? How many folks are behind on their electric bills? Are they making payments, or are they just failing to catch up? And how has that number increased or changed as our electric rates have gone up? So that's my first concern, is that if rates keep going up, more people are going to stop paying. And I know that we as a community don't want to be in the position of, you know, turning the lights and the heat out on old folks and families with kids, but somebody's going to have to pay that. And then my other question...
I do know disconnection rates are at an all-time, or at a high.
So that's my concern, is that if we keep raising rates, there are folks who aren't going to be able to pay, and then the folks who are able to pay are just going to have to pay more. And then my other question is, as rates go up, to what extent are businesses that are able to going to switch fuels and invest in more efficient equipment, which probably won't be bought in Sitka? You know, people are probably going to be buying that equipment from somewhere else. So that's not business that's staying local, and it's not sales tax that we're collecting here. And if our consumption doesn't continue to go up, but our rates do, are we going to be able to raise the money that way? Again, you know, I don't love the solution of the property tax, but I think there is more potential to solve our problem using the property tax than there is to keep raising our electric rates.
First of all, the property tax is not necessarily the forum, the mechanism for providing the money to pay the electric department. Listen, if we had enough money in the general fund to subsidize the electrical fund for a couple of years, you know, I'd say, well, let's do it. But to some degree, in the final analysis, the electrical fund has got to stand on its own. That's the law. That's how it's supposed.
It's true.
That's how it's supposed to be.
But it's short $2 to $3 million next year. That's the thing. So where to get the money from?
Noted. I mean, yeah. And these are projections,
of course,
depending on a lot of different things. So I'm going to pray for the water, selling water. If you ever sell water, then. Well, if you want a solution, there's one for you.
It's true. But we could all in 5 years just be rolling in cash. And
But to some degree, there's two major concerns here. One is, how do we ensure that those people in our town who are incredibly valuable to us can still afford to live here? And the second one is, how do we set the table so our businesses can expand, our economy can expand, because you've got an expanding economy. To some degree, it's going to alleviate some of the problems that we have. So.
Yeah, because I think at the heart of this is what to raise where so as to impact the least people, to make people want to move to Sitka, to make businesses want to move to Sitka, but also keep it affordable for the people who are already here. But Margie Parmalee, did you want to jump in on this at all?
Well, just pretty much I agree with Paxton, but I think this whole pill would be a lot easier to swallow if we were at one millage rate instead of two at a time. And I know it's only a cap, but I know what'll happen. I mean, I've watched it too many times. And I think that there's just other things that need to happen, and then this will be a much easier pill to swallow.
Thank you, Margie Parmalee. We have a caller on line one. This is Marcy. Mary, I'm sorry. Rob writes his C's like Y's. Mary, you're on Raven Radio's Proposition 1 forum. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. And I'd again like to echo Scotty that thank you, everybody, for coming. There's a couple things. First, I'll say that I am against the proposition. We're still trying to figure out for sure that the sky is falling, and I don't think it's the time to take a knee-jerk reaction based on assumption and things that haven't happened yet. But there's a couple things that we haven't really spoken about, or I haven't heard in the forums that I've listened to and in the community so much. SICK has a permanent fund. It's a rainy day fund. This blunder with the dam and the overage and the way it's hurting our community right now, a rainy day fund is for a rainy day, and it's pouring outside right now. We're trying to raise revenue, so I'd like to hear people's thoughts on that. And, you know, we hesitate to touch the savings unless we have to, but we can also bolster those savings. The city owns a lot of properties around town, properties that aren't collecting any property tax whatsoever. If we sold those, put that money in the fund, that's the money we tap back out to help pay down the principal on SAM and get ourselves in a better electrical situation. There's no reason for the city to own those properties. The minute they sell, somebody starts paying property tax on them. Somebody builds on them, that's job. Sales tax on the material. Once the home on there, that property tax goes up, you know, exponentially. So my concern is we keep raising the property taxes. We drive young families out of town. Our school enrollment goes down. Then we're going to have to come up with more money for the schools.
Thank you so much, Mary. So Mary's talking about alternative sources for revenue to address this budget deficit that we have. What do you think about the merits of her ideas? And what are some of your ideas if this doesn't pass? What would you want the city to turn to?
Selling property makes imminent sense.
This is Gary Paxton talking.
And they should pursue that and pursue it vigorously. As I said in my letter, it needs to be simple, understandable, and achievable. One of the problems with the property tax, Robin, is I think it is really a hard pull. I'd be surprised if it didn't go down rather decisively. It has in the past. It's the charter, and if I'm not mistaken, I thought the charter require 60% of the people to vote for it. I mean, it's going to be harder to do that than some of these other things that you can do. You can control. You could make a decision on senior service taxes. You can make a decision on increasing the amount that's taxable. You can make a decision on increasing property values, although I was disappointed here it's going to take five years to get that in action. So you need to do things that are achievable. And I think if the extended 1% sales tax, and I'm not wedded to this, but I just think in terms of achievability, that is something that would pass easier than raising the property tax.
And just to clarify, by extending 1% sales tax, do you mean the year-round sales tax? So getting it at 6%
for the entire
year-round.
That's $1 million, though.
Right, to make people sure they understand. John Stein, what do you think?
Oh, my.
Big inhale, I know.
I was contemplating the electric rates again, and electric rates, as been demonstrated, is elastic. So the higher the rate goes, the less consumption. So I would submit that maybe we need to look at the rate design to find out where the sweet spot is, that we can reduce the electric rates, consumption will rebound, and we'll be in the same place, and people will feel better about it because they're not writing checks to the oil companies for $2.25 a gallon for heating oil. So I guess I would look at the electric rates. And then, as Gary said, selling water My idea on that, Gary, is to freeze it first and send it south frozen.
Well, wasn't there a time way back in the day where we sold ice?
Well, right. So here we need great big compressors to freeze that ice, and the water quality would never change because it's frozen by the time it got south. I think it's a heck of a deal.
Thank you, John Stein. I want to add to at next week's assembly meeting, next Tuesday, Utility Director Brian Bertacci is giving a presentation that will further some of this modeling about where to put our electric rates. So if that's something that interests you or listeners, I encourage you to attend, and we'll be reporting on it. Robin Sherman, yeah.
A couple things. One, I wanted to respond to something that the last caller, Mary, said. She talked about paying down the principal on the debt for the dam. And the way those bonds are structured, I just want to make sure people understand that we can't pay down the principal yet. We are paying interest only on the first portion of that debt until 2030. And the way the bonds are structured, we do not have the ability to pay that down, is my understanding from talking to the folks at the city. With respect,
that's just the reality of it.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With respect to, you know, whether the sky is falling and what we can actually do, you know, I do agree. It is hard to convince people to raise the property tax, and you know, I'm a little bit challenged by your argument that it's really hard to do it, and then saying, but we shouldn't do it anyway because that in fact makes it harder to do. We do have the option. As voters and members of this community to decide whether we want to raise the property tax or not. I think there are a lot of people out there who have a very negative reaction to it. But I would ask all the property owners who are thinking about this question to go out there and do the math, figure out what a 2 mil increase is actually going to cost you. There's a calculator on the city's website that lets you look up your property value, calculate what the extra 2 mils will cost, and then if you're itemizing your taxes, which most people do in Alaska, you have to write off that amount off of your taxes. So you actually get a little bit of a discount on it. And then compare that with what an increase in electric rates and what an increase in sales tax is going to cost you, and figure that into your decision. You know, what is it actually going to cost you? And the last thing that the caller raised is whether we should be spending money out of our permanent fund, and that's really a question for the city. I think there are restrictions on whether we can do that or not.
I think that takes a vote to get it out of the permanent fund. And property sales, by the way, the revenue from property sales goes into the permanent fund. So the only thing you'd get out would be real estate taxes a year after the sale.
Yeah. I should reiterate that we did invite the city to take part in this forum, just in case anyone's wondering, where's the city? And they weren't able to participate, but they did supply us some information. But Marjorie Parmalee, did you want to answer this question about what else should be done if not raise property taxes? While we're talking about it, and we're nearing actually the end of our program, we have about 10 minutes left.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered a lot of the bases. That what else can we do? I still say it's we're getting doom and gloom so much. I know there's a problem. I know this has to be paid, but if you think about it, every year we're this much short, we're not going to make it, we're this much short, we're not going to make it. Well, for the past 3 years, we've made it plus. And for the past 3 years, we've heard we're not going to make it, we need more money. It's a doom and gloom report we get every year. And some of us are going, wait a minute, is this really a wolf?
So what's it going to take to believe it, though? I mean, at some point, the city is going to have to balance the budget. And if they don't have the money, they don't have the revenue, they're going to either raise it somewhere or they're going to make big cuts. And I hope we don't get to the point that we cut things that are really important to this community.
I actually have a letter from the Sentinel, like a letter to the editor, which said, I sure don't want to see the mill rate go up, but even more than that, I don't want to see Sitka go down the tubes. And that's kind of, but I bring this up because that's kind of, I think, distilling this conversation a little bit, a fundamental question. Is Sitka going to go down the tubes if we don't do this? And if not this, then what? And is this a step that could save us and put us on the road to sustainability? We have a caller online too. This is Eric. Eric, you're on Raven Radio.
Hi. Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I just want to say that I did use that calculator on the city website for seeing how much this might impact an average homeowner. And where the city website says you might be paying an extra $50, $60 a month, what I see when I do the math is what that equates to in purchasing power for someone trying to purchase a home in Sitka. $50, $60 a month on a 30-year loan turns into $10,000 when someone's trying to buy a home in Sitka. And I think that there is a hidden consequence of a 2 mil increase, and that is the trade-off on affordable housing, or at least just trying to make housing feasible. Maybe affordable isn't in the works, but just feasible. Thanks.
And I'm being redundant here.
Gary Paxton again, yeah.
When you increase property tax by a third, it's not going to hurt the homeowners. I get to pay additional tax on my house, but those people who are renters, who are renting, the owners of those buildings are going to pass on that cost to the renters. So the very people that we are concerned about, that we need to give have the least impact in tax increases, will be affected negatively, in my view, by the property tax.
Can I provide a counter argument and then respond? Sure. What if the electric rates go up and that cost is passed down? That argument was given at the Assembly Forum two nights ago. So
told you 43 minutes ago. Cheap property tax and cheap electrical rates are good. But listen, if electric rates have to go up, what is it, 3 mils?
Electric rates? If they have to go up 20%, let's say.
Yeah, but 20 cents, rather than paying 11 cents now or 12 cents, you're going to pay 13.
Or you're going to pay more like 14 or 15. But no. Keep going. So if you have to pay 14 or 15,
okay. Mean, if the answer is, and the answer is you've got to pay for the Blue Lake Dam, then that's what you're going to have to do. Unless by God's impact in cold winters or selling water or an increasing economy or whatever gives you the ability to do it without increasing electrical rates. But listen, I've made my point more than I should have. So I feel about it.
Do we have David on line one? Oh, I think we lost David. Okay. Hopefully he'll call back. David, please call back if you are trying to get a hold of us. Does anyone want to elaborate on that? No? Okay. There's a lot to take away from this, and I don't know if this is a fair topic to turn to, but there is one thing I do want to bring up, which is... there's our caller, so we'll see if he'll join. But the thing I wanted to bring up is just the... what's happening with Sitka's income disparity. So recently we've seen a separation between those who make over $100,000 in their household and those who make under $50,000 in their household. And that number is growing bigger and bigger. That difference is growing bigger and bigger. These numbers came from the Planning Commission. They hired a consultant to look at Sitka's comprehensive plan, and we learned that 17% of Sitkans make over $100,000. They make half of our income as a community. 57% of Sitkans, so that's almost two-thirds, 57%, they make under $50,000. And so at the backdrop of this whole thing for me is this question of, well, what's really realistic for people? You know, there's what we need in the city. But then there's what each mother, father, and child needs in their household. And the ability to afford what you can afford, sometimes you just can't pay it. And sometimes there's people who can. And I just bring this up as an aspect to the conversation. Oh, we have callers, though. So we're gonna go to them. This is David on line one. David, you're on Raven Radio.
Yes. I've lived in Sitka since 1996, and I own two properties, and I don't really have a problem with the mill rate going up 2 mils. And I think the government here is one of the most accessible, and I've lived in a lot of cities, and I think they spend their money pretty wisely, all in all. And in order to keep up the services we have, this is probably one of the least painful ones to use. And I rent one of my properties, and I don't intend to pass the cost on to the renter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's from a landlord himself.
Okay, well, thank you much.
Thank you so much, David. And we also have Mark online, too. Mark, you're on Raven Radio's Proposition 1 forum.
Is this me? This...
Oh, sorry, not Mark, Matt. Matt, yeah. Welcome to Raven Radio.
Hi, I'm getting a lot of feedback, but...
We are, too, but I think we're plugging along anyway, which is very admirable and very sickened of us. So we'll try to make out what you have to say.
All right, trying to separate personalities out. I like the people in Sitka. I like the people who work for city government. I don't think they've done a good job. I think they wasted a lot of money. Over the years, I've been going to the Portsmouth Harbor meetings and not blaming the Portsmouth Harbor Commission, but there's all kinds of examples of exorbitant costs. That when they re-roofed the gazebo down in Crescent Harbor, a contractor at a Ports and Harbor meeting said he could have done it at a profit for $35,000. He would have done a enameled steel roof, but the city wanted to have shingles, wood shades, which don't last that long in high winds, and we spent a lot of money on that totally unnecessarily. I just wanted to point out that the millage rate is low in Sitka, but the property values are assessed at the highest in the state. So when you consider Proposition 1 and you consider the raising the millage rate, it's not just simply a simple number of millage rate. You have to consider it's a percentage of the property values.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit in the start of the program, and we're actually coming close to the end. And I want to give everyone just a minute to talk about their decision and kind of the big takeaway for you when it comes to making it as a Sitkin. Whoever wants to go first can. I would say, John, do you want to go first? John Stein here.
Okay, yeah, I'm retired, so I'm happily collecting pension, which is nice, and I'm cashing in investments, which works out a little bit. However, I still have a kid in school, which is an expensive proposition. So I find it occasionally difficult to keep up, and every once in a while, that credit card bill or balance creeps higher than I want it to be. So I certainly appreciate that. I own a house and I own some property, and I have to write a check for like $4,000 a year besides what's collected in my mortgage. That's a tough thing, and I really appreciate it. I have friends and kids who have difficulty, finding reasonable places. So I understand what the issue is.
Thank you so much, John. Marjorie Parmalee, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I've seen all the signs around town that say, support Proposition Number 1, we support Sitka and we care for Sitka's future and that kind of thing. And I just want to say I voted no on Proposition 1 and I also support Sitka. I'm born and raised here. I love this place, but I understand that there are some alternatives. And yes, we need to raise tax eventually, but not this one.
Gary Paxton, what do you think? Last thoughts on this.
Well, first of all, I think we've had a history of good government that preceded me, by the way, and we have good government today. I think they have a significant problem, and I will support whatever they can figure out to do to get to where they need to go. I stand by my position. I prefer other solutions than a property tax. But listen, Sitka's best days are still ahead, and we're going to sort this baby out.
That's such a good attitude. And it's true that no matter what happens, yes or no, it's not going to be enough to carry us all the way. So some big decisions are yet ahead. And Robin Sherman, what are your last thoughts on this?
I'm a new resident here. I am reminded every day of what a great place this is to live and how many people who live here truly care about this place and want to do the right thing. You brought up the issue of affordability. I feel fortunate in that whether we decide to raise property taxes or sales taxes or the electric rate, I'll be able to afford it. I want to do the best possible thing for the people who are just struggling to get by. Having looked at the numbers, I I think that's the property tax, which is why I'm voting yes. I respect people who feel the other way. I just hope we can all come together to solve this problem and maintain all the things that we love about this community.
That's Robin Sherman, Gary Paxton, Marjorie Parmalee, and John Stein on the air talking about how they'll be voting on Proposition 1.
Thank you, Emily.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. Just to give you some last notices, just reminder that Election Day is nearing. So you will have a chance, too, to weigh in on this ballot proposition that's happening October 4th. Thank you to all those who called in, and most especially to you guys participating. You know, what you said about how I care about Sitka, too. You guys wouldn't have come on this program if you didn't care about Sitka a great deal and put yourselves out there in this way. So thank you for taking the time out of your schedules and bringing your perspectives to the table. Thanks to Rob Woolsey, our news director, and Winter News fellow Emily Russell for working behind the scenes on all of this. And we're going to post the full audio to this program on our website, kcaw.org, where you can listen if you missed any of it. And if you do want to calculate what your property tax would be under this ballot proposition, as Robin Sherman said, there is a calculator on the city's website, www.cityofsitka.com. We're going to head to the BBC headlines next, followed by Night Jazz. Thanks for joining us. I'm Emily Kwong, KCAW reporter, and you're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka.